A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 31, 1994, entitled, Remember, Remember Not. The scripture readings are Isaiah 43, verses 1 through 3a and 14 through 21, and Luke 2, verse 17. The text for the sermon are Isaiah 43, verse 1, verse 14, and verses 18 through 19. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Isaiah 43 is a favorite passage of mine, and I've handled it from different angles and different nuances over the years. But one thing that struck me recently was the fact that Isaiah, this particular poet whose writings we find in chapters 40 through 55, probably uses the old tradition, the great tradition of Israel, as much as any other prophet, if not more, constantly conjuring up images of the past, creation, Exodus, Abraham and Sarah, the barrenness of Sarah, Noah, the covenant of God with all creation, never again to destroy. All of those images continue to come forth in this poet's writings. And so it would be understandable that he would challenge Judah in exile to remember, to remind them of those great moments in their past, to remind them who they were and why they were at all. That's understandable. Remember. One of the great gifts that we have as human persons, to be able to remember, to recall, to relive, and to be energized again and inspired and encouraged through remembering. But it struck me strange that he would then say in verse 18, remember not the former things. Obviously, even though he doesn't use the word remember in this chapter, he is calling them to remember, because this particular section of the poem begins with the affirmation that Babylon will be torn down and destroyed. Judah is sitting as the captive in exile in Babylon, this dominant world empire. But the poet says, don't worry about Babylon. God can handle Babylon. I'll break down their bars, etc. For I am the Lord, your Holy One, the Creator of Israel, your King. But then, calling to their mind their founding event, the Exodus, he says, for I am the Lord who makes a way in the sea, a path in the mighty waters, who brings out chariot and horse, army and warrior. They lie down, they cannot rise, they are extinguished, quenched like a wick. All the time playing on their memory, all the time reminding them of that mighty act of God through which they were set free. How strange then that he goes on in the next words to say, do not remember. And so you have the poet conjuring up images of the past in order to enable them to remember, and then saying, remember not the former things. Well, obviously, either we have a contradiction here, or the poet was not saying to them, don't remember the things that I've just called to your mind. Much rather, what I think he was saying is, do not remember your past defeats that have brought you into this present situation of exile where you are numb of spirit, without hope, where you are on the edge of cynicism, where you're ready to assimilate, to believe that it's all over, that there's no future and no hope. Get out of that spiritual deadness that has overcome you and overtaken you, because what is about to happen will be more dramatic than anything you've ever experienced before. So that in contrast, it will be as though the past pales before the thing that God is about to do. In fact, don't you see it? Don't you perceive it? Don't you sense that it's about to break forth, to bud forth now? And then he promises to make a way through the wilderness, to create rivers in the desert, because the promise is that God will bring God's people home. So remember, in order that you might realize anew who I am, but remember not the former things, as though it's all over, as though the chapter is closed, as though you have seen God's best work, as though there's nothing more, nothing new. What the prophet had to deal with was a people who had lost their ability to dream. What he had to deal with was the people who thought that all of God's action was in the past, and that God was on sabbatical, as it were, just sort of letting history run down. This was a call. This was an arousing to faith and to vision and to hope again, to believe that God is still God, and that the best is yet to be. Probably on New Year's Eve, it's an appropriate word to remember, to remember not. To remember God, the Creator, the Redeemer, the one who upholds all things by the word of power, the God who has acted in our past, in those great acts of creation and redemption, in the event that we've just celebrated again in the birth of Christ, the Word made flesh, Emmanuel, God with us. But remember not in the sense of being stuck in the past, as though it's all over but the shouting. I suspect that was not only the problem of the exiles in Judah. I think that's a real temptation for all of us. I think the Christian church is pretty much in the situation of the exiles who believe that God's great act and action is in the past. I can remember 100 years ago or so when I was in seminary, one of the books that was very popular in New Testament studies was by a New Testament scholar from Basel named Oscar Kuhlmann. The book is entitled Christ and time. And he did a biblical study of the movement of redemption, redemptive history. And I think very faithfully, according to the biblical materials, the biblical sense of the movement of history, creation, Christ the midpoint, and then the end. But if we do be honest with the New Testament documents, when they said the end, they meant the end. Very literally. They were expecting the end. And so as the time went by and the end didn't come, that had to be reinterpreted. And how was it reinterpreted? Well, it was reinterpreted in the sense that God's final act was accomplished in Jesus Christ. And now we were just waiting for it to come on to the end. And I remember the illustration that Oscar Kuhlmann used, and it's fresh in my mind now because we celebrate 50 years of the invasion of Normandy and D-Day, and just recently of the Battle of the Bulge. Oscar Kuhlmann used the illustration. Now, this is in the 50s. This is rather closer to the event, but he said, you know, it's like in the Second World War with D-Day. The war was over. That was the decisive moment. And for the rest, well, it was mopping up. I think those that got caught in the Battle of the Bulge after that might argue with that. That was just a mopping up operation. But Oscar Kuhlmann's point was well taken. That was the decisive point. Everyone knew at that point it was over. It was over. Then they simply had to make it actual fact. And so Oscar Kuhlmann said, so with the Christ event. As a matter of fact, in the line of God's redemptive activity in the Christ event, in the death and resurrection of Jesus, it's over. We wait now for the end. You know, I don't believe that anymore. I took it hook, line, and sinker. But I can't imagine that one could, at this advanced point of my life, the springtime of senility, or farther along a little bit more, maybe, I can't imagine anymore that we could be that arrogant. Because that's exactly what the exiles were saying. It's over. Oh, yes, talk about creation. Talk about the Exodus. But it's over. It's over. God has done what God can do. It's all over but the shouting. So I think the attitude and the spirit of the Christian church and most of us Christian people is that it all happened back there. All well to celebrate Christmas. Keep the story alive. Absolutely. Remember. But remember not also if that means that was the golden age, that was the high point, that it's all running down now, that we're just sort of sitting around waiting for it to get over with. Rather, the word of the prophet to the exiles, and it seems to me the word of the prophet to us tonight would be to say, shake yourself out of your lethargy. What makes you think it's all over? Who knows but what the incarnation of the Word was but in order to bring the God of Israel to the nations. Because when Jesus came, the guardians of the tradition said no. And paradoxically, ironically, in the rejection of Israel, of Jesus, the gospel goes to the Gentiles. And the Gentiles take the God of Israel to the nations and accomplish what Israel was to accomplish. For this same prophet said to Judah, you are to be a light to the nations, a beacon to the nations, to the coastlands, to earth's farthest extent. But it was in the rejection of Jesus and the bringing of the gospel to the nations that the God of Israel came to the nations. And I wonder where we are in the calendar of God's redeeming purposes tonight. I no longer think that there's going to be the world evangelization and the whole world is going to be brought to Jesus Christ. I don't think that. I think we continue to be called to be witnesses to the whole world. I don't know how one can be sensitive at all to what's happening in our world, to the globalization of the world and the intermixion of cultures and the sharing of the treasures of faith, to have the arrogance and superiority to think that we have the answer for the whole world. Uncharacteristically, I read a book that wasn't theological this week. It's entitled Comeback, The Fall and Rise of the American Automobile Industry. It took Detroit about 20 years to recover from its arrogance and its superiority, thinking that Detroit was synonymous with the automobile and would always dominate the world. The title is significant, The Fall and Rise Again. And the book concludes just back a few months ago with a vibrant and strong American automobile industry, but no longer a Detroit prerogative, but rather a global interconnectedness that has transformed that industry and made it strong and vibrant once again. And so I think about that in terms of my field. How long will the Christian church go on with its arrogance and its superiority? Dead on its feet and dead in the water. There is an outstanding CEO in Western Michigan who has got all the right concerns and willing to put his money where his concerns are. There was a religious leader who has an institute for the selling of the free enterprise system, and he came to the CEO to say, you should give us a donation because we bring this message into the seminaries. And he said, why should I care if you bring it into the seminaries? The church doesn't matter. We are a backwater and a ghetto. Too long studying our naval and arrogant superiority that somehow or other we are the salvation of the world when the world has passed us by. Do you think we may have gotten fascinated with Christmas and missed Pentecost? Do you think that we're stuck in the past 2,000 years ago, when maybe the Spirit of God is blowing all over the world, whistling right past our ears? For example, the mysteries of quantum physics. Ah, you're sorry you gave me Frank Tipler. the physics of immortality. I can't understand it enough to ever make it real dangerous for me, but my goodness, when he starts talking about computers and what the potential is. And when I hear the physicist David Baum, who died a year ago, talk about quantum theory and the fact that its implications simply have not yet been worked out in society. When I read about the globalization of industry, and I think that this poet might come to us tonight and say, Remember creation and Exodus and incarnation, but remember Pentecost, and remember that the golden age is not behind you, but the best is yet to be, and this is God's world, and God is alive, and I don't think we have begun yet to fathom, to dream. It has not entered into the human heart, the things that God has in store for this wonderful cosmos, infinite in variety and diversity and beauty and wonder and awe. So, remember, but not to get stuck. Not to absolutize some past moment. Rather to see the past as simply the movement of God, who is always ahead of us, who has wonders, mysteries that we've not yet dreamed of. What a good time at this hinge point from one year to another to come and kneel for a moment. Jesus said, remember. He broke bread, poured a cup, and said, remember. Remember me. What he didn't know is that he was on the threshold not only of the hell of Good Friday, but the dawn of Easter Sunday. And so for us personally, to come for a moment and to kneel, take your time, and remember, but also remember not. This is a great time and a great place to cherish that which will energize and inspire you. But to let go the things that dog you, haunt you, old fears, grudges, all of that in the past that can only be a hindrance to the flight of your soul into the future that is as bright as the promises of God. So come and remember, and forget, and enter a new year in the newness that God, by grace, always offers again and again. Come.